Listening Dog Media. Music, sport, history. Stories from the people of the city. The Manc Made Podcast with Jack Wood.
Thank you for downloading another Manc Made Podcast. Or if this is your first one, thanks so much for meeting me. I suppose this is not how we normally meet. It's strange, and I don't normally sound like this. I'm Jack Wood, so I'm recording this perched at the end of my bed, as I think this will probably be the sweet spot for acoustics, I guess. I'm just presuming. But we're not going to talk too much about why I'm recording this way, because obviously we're in lockdown. But thankfully, the chat we had with Sharon, who is this week's guest, happened before lockdown, so there would be no mention of Corona. It's a really good distraction because Sharon is truly inspiring. You might not recognise Sharon Latham's name, but you will recognise a lot of her work, whether it be from her time spent as the first female photographer for Man City, the first ever female official photographer that the club hired, to her becoming Noel Gallagher's personal photographer, which led her to then tour with Noel and U2. And when we had a little chat with her, she'd only just got back from the Oscars, so this is Sharon, jet-lagged, but full of inspiration, full of passion, and full of so much Manc charm. I think you're going to love her. I love her. She's brilliant, and I want to just sit down and chat with her again once this is all blown over. So I hope you enjoy this little chat, and I hope you're safe and well. How did it all begin, the music photography?
I was 8 when I first picked a camera up, because my dad died when I was 8, and he was into photography.
Yeah.
And I sort of got his camera and that was it. I've never not taken photos since then.
So was it like straight away, so as soon as your dad died, you're like, I want to carry on doing this. So was it a way of remembering
him? I don't know whether it was a way of remembering him or it was just the sheer fact that I wanted to do something that he'd done.
Yeah.
I remember as a child just being fascinated with him when he took photographs. He used to take us up Rivington, up in Bolton and going to all the wilds and what have you. And it was amazing. But and when he died, it was just like, well, I'll have this.
Yeah.
And then, each time I was taking photographs, you did feel a little bit like, well, Dad had done it like this, or I wonder if Dad had liked that. So, yeah, it was for a while it was like that. And then after that, I just literally really loved it.
It's like a passion.
And I loved the process of, like, for Christmas and birthdays, I'd get vouchers for developing camera and film, or I'd just get a roll of film bought me in a box or whatever. So, yeah, and over the years, I've taken thousands of SLR pictures with film. And then as I grew into a teenager, obsessed with music, obsessed with it.
But it's not, I mean, there's a lot of people that want to go and take pictures of bands and stuff, but you've managed to make it a full career. So how did you take it from, like, you were doing this photography thing, you turn up to gigs, then you are away, you're joining Oasis on tour. When did that happen?
Noel Gallagher on tour.
Yeah.
I think it's perseverance, because I did it for so long. I moved to Liverpool, I risked a lot. I moved to Liverpool, my family were literally grown up, because I did the whole thing of having kids really young.
Mm.
So I had 3 kids quite young. And then as you get older, your priorities of doing what you want to do, your dreams. I wanted to make a living out of taking photographs, and I couldn't because I had family to think about. So I still took photos, still had a laugh and all the rest of it. But then eventually it came a time I thought, if I don't do this, I'm never going to do it. So I moved to Liverpool purely to actually try and get in the music scene in Liverpool, because I just knew that...
Why not the music scene in Manchester then?
I don't know. Somebody had said there's more open mics in Liverpool and there's this, that and the other. And I had friends over in Liverpool who I could stay with at the time. So I literally moved there with nothing. My second marriage had gone to bits. So I thought, right, it's now or never.
So
kids are grown up.
What sort of time was this? So
2000.
So the sort of, I guess in a way, I guess the big 90s boom in Manchester had sort of happened, and it was sort of ebbing a little bit. So you're like, well, Liverpool's...
Well, I'll just have a bash at Liverpool. I'll just start. Everybody walks around with a guitar on the back or a football in their arm in Liverpool, which is not dissimilar to Manchester, really.
No.
And again, it was the offer of staying at friends, so I did. And then I used to go to every open mic. I'd turn at record studios. I'd just offer my services left, right and centre, which is really difficult when you're an unknown photographer.
Of course.
So I literally barraged my way through everything I could. I'd turn up and try and cover gigs when I didn't have accreditation. Anything I could do, and I did it. But the weird thing that happened in Liverpool was not the actual music side of it, was the fact that I started photographing a non-league football team, and I'd never done sports photography before properly.
So what team was that?
AFC Liverpool was a non-league football team that had set up, and a friend of mine had set it up, and he said, oh, come and take photos for the first season.
Mm.
And I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. So after that, I thought, oh, I might fancy having a go at this. So I did a bit more stuff, sort of like for other local non-league teams. And then a friend of mine said, oh, here, try this, it's Everton. So I went and did a bit of stuff at Everton. So I was opening doors then, but then I had a horrific car crash.
Oh, man.
And I broke my back. And I was in hospital for 18 months.
Not like the rehabilitation of that must... And then for being a photographer, which is quite an active...
Didn't pick a camera up for 2 years. I was depressed. It was an absolute nightmare. And ended up in a spinal unit in Southport for a while as well because I couldn't walk. I was paralysed.
Wow.
So I damaged the nerve endings in my spinal cord. I'd not split it or anything. So, yeah, I was out of action and I was, like, depressed and fed up. And then eventually when I started walking again and got into it, someone said to me, said, oh, you know, I saw your photographs on the AFC Liverpool site, the non-league football site. Yeah. Are you back into photography? And it was a friend of mine in Manchester and I said... No, I said, I'm going to have to come back to Manchester. I need to be near family. I'm not well, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh. He said, oh, well, if you get back into it, let me know. I was like, yeah, yeah. He said, because I'm looking at Man City now. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then another friend of mine said, look, ease your way back into photography and go and do the Manchester International Festival. So I did MIF.
Yeah, brilliant festival.
Yeah, photographed MIF. And
what year was this, though, MIF?
2000 and, I'm trying to think... It might have been 2008.
So
2007, 2008.
Yeah.
So I came back to Manchester and I moved back to Manchester just because I wasn't well.
No.
And then I shot MIF. And then it just
And was
went.
That an easy process coming back into the photography after that massive accident?
It was therapeutic.
Yeah.
But it was difficult. And then after doing MIF, again, this same friend saw the pictures and he's like, oh, I'm going to try and get you in at City. Why don't you come and do some work for City? And I'm a massive Man City fan. Absolutely love Man City. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I managed to see the content manager of the website and he said, oh, well, from the Manchester United, a great guy called Chris Bailey. He's still at City now and he's an epic guy. And he said to me, so, well, I'm doing a feature on Stevie Island. He said, come and shoot Stevie Island with me. So I was like, oh, all right. And this was after one meeting. It was so lovely. It was so nice. So I went and shot Stevie Island, did all these amazing pictures. And then that was it. I had a little bit of an inroad. And then I got offered to do some freelance games. And then 10 years later, the rest is history. I was
you became
there for 10 years.
The first female official Premier League photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that feel? Massive.
I was so chuffed. Mm. I mean, there's lots of other great female photographers, but there's never been an official Premier League club photographer that was a woman, so I was the first one, which is really bad seeing it was only 2009.
Yeah.
That's 2008,
that's mad.
2009, that is mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's only like 10 years ago.
And yeah, and then so you got in the city first, and that was amazing. You're back on your feet, you're feeling it. And then how did this meeting with Noel Gallagher start? Was this through City?
Yeah, well, again, in between that time, I had photographed Oasis a couple of times before they split up. Just as a non-entity, not as anybody famous, just I managed to get a pass. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did Main Road,
which
was really, really good. And I did, obviously, the Etihad as well.
Yeah.
But never had any proper interaction with them. And then, obviously, both of them used to come to the games. This was in 2008 when I was there, before they split up.
Of course.
So I'd done shoots with them on pitch side and stuff like that. And Noel and Liam and I were very chatty and we had a laugh, got a lot in common with City. And then they split up. And then... For some reason, it was just sort of accident that I ended up sort of on the Noel side of things.
Yeah,
I don't know why it was really. It was just the fact that I think Noel was at one side of the stadium and Liam used to be at the other, and you were just there more. Yeah, yeah, it's right place, right time.
Like a divorce.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, who gets the child?
Yeah,
who gets the photographer? So yeah, and I've stayed friends with Noel, and we get on really well. Obviously, our main passion is City and everything City, but. Music, photography. Yeah, we got on really well. And then when I decided to leave in 2016, so I was always coming across Noel and I shot a couple of things for him and we did a couple of gigs when he was doing Manchester. But then in 2016, he's like, why are you leaving when Pep came? What are you doing? And I was like, if I don't leave now, I'm going to end up here forever because it's easy and because, yeah, I do love it, but it's also, I want to do more. I've got other plans that I want to do. And he's like, why would you want to do more? It's Man City.
His whole world.
It's Pep. And I went, I know.
Does he want the gig?
Yeah, but the last shoot I got to do was with Pep and Noel.
Wow.
So when Pep first came, Noel interviewed him. Do you remember the interview?
Yeah.
And that I shot the behind the scenes on that, and that was my last photo shoot at City.
What a way to go out.
Yeah. My last game was Man City v Swansea with Pellegrini's last game as well.
Wow.
And then my last main shoot was with Pep and Noel.
How was that? Was that...
Yeah, like, it was cool.
Because he's quite like... From the outside, Noel seems quite grumpy. It seems like not a person who might be comfortable in the camera. Like, does he have to trust you to sort of have
Everybody
those...
Everybody does, though, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, even you, when you want the photograph taken, you're going to feel uncomfortable.
Oh, it's
you?
Horrible.
Yeah.
It's one of the most uncomfortable situations of my life. I'd rather take my clothes off, to be
80%.
Honest.
Nice. The room's empty. Away you go.
There's a lot of windows here.
I think with everybody, I think this job, 80% of what I do is personality.
All of these stories has been the connection that you personally made.
20% is your technical and understanding of photography. I've never been to uni.
No.
I've never been to uni. I've never been to college.
Did you do any formal training for photography?
No, I just picked up my dad's camera when I was 8.
There you go.
And then I've learnt along the way, and obviously you have to try and... I did a BTEC in art, and I did A-level art, which incorporated photography, but that was many years ago. I'm a lot older than you. But I've never done anything at uni, never done to college, and like, it was all experience-based. And every time I got a new camera or a new lens, I'd have to learn about it back in the day before the internet.
And you just learn by doing.
You'd have to go to the library, and you'd have to learn by doing it, yeah. Mm. And when anybody says to me now, oh, what's your biggest tip for a photographer? I say, take photos.
Yeah.
Take photos every single day, even if it's with your phone or with your camera, whatever. Take photos because you'll learn to get used to what you're doing, how you're framing it, what you're taking. And also you'll get to find out which sort of photography you like because there's so many different sorts of photography.
It's so true. And there is an attitude, I suppose, at the moment where if someone's got like, someone go out, get a degree and go, now, please like employ me. But no one's really going out there and making the connections and it needs to be done. It's so easy to do now. Like Twitter is such a great... way of like meeting people and then chatting to them and then making the connections.
In this world now, it's far easier to make and make connections than it was when I was young. Oh, when I was a girl. Because I'm so old. No, it is though. I mean, I've known a world without social media.
Mm.
And my formative years of getting older and doing cool stuff was when Twitter and Instagram and all the rest of it were not around, so it's down to you as a person.
Oh, definitely.
So it is down to your relationship building and what you do as to whether you do well in photography. Well, people photography anyway. If you're a landscape photographer, you know, you're just taking photographs of landscape. However, to get clients, you've still got to be able to have a good personality to make sure you've got the client base.
You've got to have
the
connection,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So going back to Noel, because you went on tour with Noel.
For the past 5 years, 4 or 5 years, I've worked exclusively a lot with Noel, yeah. It's been great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And we've helped boost his social media up. And the first signs of it were when we went on tour and fans were literally logging on to see what he was doing because we were giving them small galleries behind the scenes at Soundcheck, then on stage. And a lot of fans direct messaged me and said, it's great because we can't go to the gigs because it's America and we can't afford it, but we can see what he's doing because of you. And it's brilliant. I love that. I love that. And I think Noel's team like that as well.
What's it like touring with Noel?
Amazing.
Then? So where have you been? Like around the
all
world?
All over
with
America.
All over America. Oh, amazing.
All over America. And then this last one was Australia with you too.
Oh my God.
So we went to...
I did look on your social media and you had you found the Edges water bottles.
Yeah.
His private
on
ones.
On the stage. Yeah.
On the stage. Did you look I mean,
you got to meet them and talk to them and all the rest of it. They're not aloof. They're absolutely wonderful people. They're really, really nice and they're very warm and very endearing. And when they're backstage, they're not like, oh, you know, they're really cool. They're really nice. And the main thing about them is their back staff is incredible.
Mm.
From the people that, you know, wash their clothes to the people that feed them to the people that are building the sets, they're all absolutely epic people. Azar is the same that I found with Noel. Noel's got a really nice, tight clique of people from his guitar techs to his stage managers. They're really fab and they're the same set of people that they obviously use for a long time and they trust.
All handpicked.
Yeah. And they're great people. And Noel's band now, the Flying Birds, is just epic.
Mm.
The girls put a different edge onto it.
Well, because he had the Scissor Lady at one
Scissor?
Point. Did
Charlotte?
You take pictures of Scissor
yeah.
Lady?
Oh, yeah. Charlotte Grand. Was on tour in America. We were on tour in America. Charlotte, YC and Jess are the three girls. And they're amazing. They do add a different dynamic to it, I think.
Yeah.
It's great.
Balances it out a little bit more.
Yeah, and I'm sure it must be different for Noel to tour with women.
Yeah. Well, doesn't he just... does he, like, when you... Are you on the tour bus with everyone, or is it...
Yeah, it mixes, really, because when we were in America, there was no room, because the tour buses in America are slightly different.
Yeah.
And Noel has a tour bus to himself.
course.
And then there's a tour bus for the band, and then there's a tour bus for the back staff. So you've got three tour buses. And there was just wasn't enough room for me, so I had to hire a car.
Yeah. So you were road tripping around the US.
So I drove around. So in between gigs, I was driving straight after. So I'd edit. Noel likes to see all the pictures after the edit to make sure, you know, we're putting stuff out that we want to say the right thing. So Noel sees them, approves them, and then we put them all out. And then I was setting off in my car and driving to the next venue. So you're going from Washington to wherever. Oh, and I've now driven in America so much, it's brilliant. And I did everything from avoid hitting a deer in the middle of the road on the route from Washington to driving to Detroit with the worst blizzard snowstorms I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, wow.
I remember arriving at Detroit airport and getting off the plane all knackered because it was like the first stop. And I went to the car hire place, and this woman's like, it was blowing a gale, it was freezing cold, and this woman behind the counter went, she said, okay, I see you've got a Mustang. And I was like, yeah, I've hired a Mustang. Look at me, I'm in America. And she went, you're going to need a bigger car. And I went, what do you mean? And she went, we've got a snowstorm coming in. And she opened this app on her phone and just showed me the weather thing. And I was like, no, you can't sell me up. I'm just going to stick with my Mustang. And she went, honey, trust me, you're going to need an SUV.
Yeah.
Anyway, she talked me into it. I went away with an SUV. And the day after the snow, I'm not joking, it was about 2 foot deep.
Oh.
And the Mustang would have just gone. So and my history with car crashes is not a good look.
No, of course.
So I got an SUV and drove through the most unbelievable weather in Detroit that I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, that was an experience. But then every gig was the same, so I'd do all the sound checks. So I'd sit and do the sound check. And it got to the point then where Noel just forgets that you're there.
Yeah.
At first.
Is that better? Is that better to photographer? Yeah. Photographer, photograph?
Yes, much better, because sort of you blend in, which means you get more candid stuff. So the pictures of Noel laughing and enjoying sound check and stuff like that are just really amazing pictures.
Is there an art to that then, sort of realizing how to sort of act around people so that you're like getting the best side of them? Do you have to sort of go into photographer mode and then normal chatty mode?
You can do both. I do both because that's just who I am. But I also find that, you know, the more you're in a situation with people, the easier they are with you and they like you, so they're not going to feel uncomfortable with you around. And the camera becomes an extension of me because I literally carry it around with me. So it's not like, oh, she's got a camera. It's like, oh, here's Shaz.
Yeah.
And the camera is just part of me. So you just sit there and you're just quietly either in a corner or, like I do, crawl around on the stage and hide behind amps and jump out, which then has Noel's in hysterics.
Yeah, creates an effect.
So, yeah. But yeah, touring around America was fun, great fun. And then Australia just recently and New Zealand was just, yeah. I've never seen a stage set up like it with you two as well. Unbelievable.
Well, they've got the money, I suppose, haven't they?
The screens were massive.
Oh, man.
And they've got two sets. So while one's being built, the other one's being built ready for the next gig.
That's
so
mad.
So they pull one down to then send that to the gig forward of that. And so you've always got a setup done for you.
That's incredible.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I suppose you can't get better than that, really. Like, for a British band, that's that pinnacle when travelling around the US and Australia.
Never ever seen anything like the U2 set up. No, it was brilliant. It was amazing. And again, as I say, such nice people to work with.
Yeah.
Such nice people. And even Bono, it's not, you know, you don't
expect... Is he still out all night and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Is it, how do you keep up with him? Can you keep up with him?
No, I don't, because I'll tend to, because I'm editing till like, because those photos have got to get back to the UK and all the rest of it. You've got to be careful. I can't go out pissing it up all night with people. I just can't do it. So I end up just editing, have a quick drink and then go to bed because it's like 2-3 o'clock when I've finished and then you're up again, ready to start again.
Driving through blizzards.
Yeah, it's not glamorous in any way, shape or form. People come to me.
Sounds it.
People go, oh, look at you, look at the glamour. And I'm like, no, there's no glamour, trust me. But it is a case of I sit and pinch myself regular.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just some bird from Bolton that's now touring the world with Noel Gallagher and Oasis. Noel Gallagher and U2 and what have you. It's just...
Well, you've literally just got back from the Oscars as well.
Yeah, I've just come back from
the Oscars. We can just touch on that a little bit. Yeah, how was that?
Awesome.
What did the celebrity smell like? Clean?
Exhausting, though.
Yeah.
Because, again, with the Oscars, it's one night, but you've got to work through the whole night because I ended up doing Elton John's after show party.
Oh, so did you see him performing with Sam Fender?
Yeah.
Wow. So
Sam was on my plane as well. So I was flying out from Heathrow and he got on my plane and afterwards I was like, hiya. And he's like, all right. Oh, such a sweetie.
He's a real nice chap, isn't he?
Such a sweetie.
So those cheekbones, my goodness. You can grate cheese on his cheekbones.
He's so cute. Yeah. He's so sweet. And so he was like, well, I'm a bit nervous, like, man. And I was like, you'll be fine. So that was him at the airport. And then I saw him before the performance and he was like, oh. And I had to photograph him on the red carpet before he went in. He was like, how do I look? And he had like a blue velvet suit on. He looked so cute.
Oh.
With a little bow tie. Is that the red carpet?
I guess that's a different mentality though, because you're having to fight for your space at those sort of things, aren't you? Or do you have
I do every year. I do the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah.
And one of my things is, again, people, relationships and all the rest of it. Instead of shouting, to your left, to your right, over here.
Yeah.
That must be very tedious for whoever stood on the red carpet.
That's like white noise.
Yeah. So for me, this really stupid Northern accent stands out. So instead of shouting, over here, Chuck, which sometimes has the effect, I'll say something like, oh my God, look at your shoes. It's got me in trouble a couple of times because I don't have a filter.
Yeah.
So I remember telling Charlie Hunman once on a red carpet, those shoes are awful. And he just turned around and he went, whereabouts in Mank are you from? Because he, he worked over here on Queer as Folk, didn't he? So he came over talking to me. So I was like, so that's it. You end up then, And what I find now, the same people come on the red carpets at TIFF, the festival, and at things like the Oscars. So they'll spot you and they'll go, "Oh, it's you. Oh, God, it's her." So again, it's not about shouting and bawling at them. It's about trying to create a very, very quick relationship with somebody based on either what they're wearing or how they look, to get their attention. If someone turned around to you and said, "Oh, I like your hair," you'd turn around and look at that person, wouldn't you, and go, "Oh, thanks.
Oh, aren't you lovely?" Like, suddenly you're off to a good start.
So
you can
take a photograph straight away as they're turning around, because you literally have got seconds with them. And the thing is about eye contact with the photographs as well, down the lens, because you can get lots of beautiful shots of people walking on a red carpet, but unless they're looking at your camera, how much good is that?
Mm. Do you do this independently and then you sell the photographs, or is this through a company?
I work through the Press Association for some of the film festivals and the Oscars and stuff like that. Yeah.
So do you have to, like, they go, okay, you need pictures of this person, this person,
they'll give
and you
a list.
Have to do it.
Yeah.
And because you've built up this relationship, it makes it a little bit easier when you've got that.
Yeah. Or there's a list of things then you've never even heard of these people, like, who the heck's that? So then you have to sit down and do your research before you go. I'll always research the films as well.
Yeah,
just to make sure that I've got the right people, because some of them have got different directors and you don't always know a director's face.
No.
And especially at Toronto, because you're doing on average 4 red carpets a day, because it's a 10-day long week festival. So there's everything from, like, this year, The Joker was there, to Just Mercy with Jamie Foxx and all that. So you've got such a diverse amount of films, and then they all want to be seen by the press as well. So you've got press conferences and press junkets. So you can work straight through for 10 hours a day, for 10 days.
It feels like, in all the things you've done, your Mank sort of charm
without a shadow of a doubt, definitely. The Northern pride that I've got and my attitude has definitely got me places that other people probably wouldn't have got to.
I mean, I want to end it there, but I feel like we need to touch on it, because you mentioned this briefly at the start, that you've beaten cancer.
Yes.
Do you mind talking about that,
something wrong? I've had breast cancer and I've had a thyroid cancer as well. So yeah, there's a lot of it around now, but it's great that I'm still here.
Of course,
I'm still alive.
Two lots though. I mean, the second time you'll be like, what is?
I know. Yeah.
And give me a break.
You sort of look at your life and go, what am I doing wrong? A lot of things.
But then, like, so you've had to come, like, mentally, you've had to be so hard and driven, like, to beat cancer once, incredible, twice, broken back. Like, how have you managed to drag yourself through all these things and then accomplish all these?
I don't know, maybe it's just a strength of personality. I think I don't want to die, thanks very much. And I've got too much to do. And I also, as I say, I pinch myself and wake up in the morning and think, I take photos and someone pays me money when I do it.
Yeah.
All my life I've taken photos and absolutely love the element of taking photos. I still love now dipping it in the water. I've still got the old school way of doing it as well at home. Dip it in the water, dip it in your fluids and hang it up, and this image comes on a piece of paper. It's epic. I love it. And I still get that buzz out of doing that now, even on a digital format, on the back of it. Oh, look, I've got that smile. Oh, look, I've got that. Took a picture of Elton at the Oscars, and it's on my Instagram, and he literally turned around because he heard me.
Yeah.
And he has met me before, and he's like, oh, hello. So literally he turned around and got this shot. And there must have been about 50 photographers. And he turned around and engaged with me, and that one shot just looks fab. Fab, love it.
Oh, it's so great. And I like what you said. It's like when you... I'm too busy to die.
Way too busy to die.
Way too busy to die.
I've got three kids and two grandkids as well. Way too busy.
Way too busy to die. Do you know what? I think we'll end it there. That's such a powerful thing to end on. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Can I ask you two more questions? You always ask people that come on. If you could describe Manchester in one word, what would that word be?
The best place in the world.
Best place in the world. I think we'll accept that. And if, say, Manchester was to like become its own sort of country, who would you want to elect as leader? Who would be our prime minister or president?
God. That's such a tough one, because you could go through a list like, you know, you could go official and go Andy Burman, because I think Andy Burman's epic, by the way. Done a lot of work with Andy. But then you sort of go for the classics like Noel.
Mm. Do you think you'd be good?
The leader of Manchester.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ruler of Manchester, Noel Gallagher.
You think the power would go to his head?
No. I think he's got that power anyway. No, I just think he'd be epic. I think he'd just make everything blue.
Just ban United fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd be... No, if you're a season ticket holder, that'd be it. You'd be evicted from Manchester. So that wouldn't be that many people then, would it?
Ooh. And on that note, we'll call it a day.